Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Welcome back to Caravan of Garbage, the show where we look at many, many things. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. Sometimes you think it's going to be real bad and then you watch it and you're like, this is all right.
I wouldn't mind it. I'll watch another episode of this.
And that's what we're looking at today.
Ah, it's a real shame.
Mission Impossible 1988 TV revival series.
You would think that's a recipe for disaster.
I thought it was going to be some A-team bullshit.
Yeah,
like
right.
Like just kind of naff and nobody gets hurt and nothing happens and it's just ha ha ha.
And everybody's an idiot.
Yeah,
but they save the day nevertheless.
This is a tight show, man.
I mean, it's... wasn't bad.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the 80s, so there's a lot of big shoulders and there's...
a lot of big hair. There's a lot of that.
Yeah.
It should also be noted that this is a continuation of the 1960s series.
It is, so it's...
went on hiatus for 15 or so years.
Yeah, so it's Peter Graves as Jim Phelps.
Yes.
He's coming out of retirement.
He has
to. For one more mission.
That's right.
Has somebody killed his wife or something?
I'll tell you, Mason.
Okay.
Okay, first of all, here's the pros of this episode. It's somehow good.
Yep.
Cons, there's no masks,
there's
no Mission Impossible masks.
Yep.
And no one goes rogue, which are the only things I want to see in a Mission Impossible series and or film.
Now, you want to see the main protagonist get critically injured, don't you?
That's
like
right.
The actor portraying the main character.
I do also want to see
sure,
that.
And sure, maybe Peter Graves was brutally injured in this, but we never see it, so.
It's entirely possible.
What's the point? Also, this is not an action-packed series, particularly. This is very much, if you remember the kind of the ponderous... action-free parts of Mission Impossible 1.
Yes.
That's this show.
All the way through, presumably.
Yeah. Every episode, just people walking down hallways.
So it kicks off, right? There's an assassin, he goes into a party. I think it's the guy from the pilot of Star Trek The Next Generation.
You think it is.
Is it?
That is John DeLancey.
Okay, good.
He is, of course, Q, the all-powerful Q in Star Trek The Next Generation, from the pilot Encounter at Farpoint, and many other episodes.
Okay, right. I just wanted to see.
He's a bloody delight and a recurring character. You know, they say the Enterprise is an additional character in that show. So is Q.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Would you say he's more important than the ship?
I mean, technically, because he can do anything.
Is there a movie where that guy crashes into a planet and the crew just watch on solemnly and go, he was as important as the ship?
No.
Okay.
Anyway, but in this, he's an assassin.
Yeah. So he goes to this party and his idea is he's going to kill the head of IMF or one of the top dudes, the new Jim Phelps,
ooh,
who trained under Jim Phelps. And he does it by shooting a diamond from a pen into his neck. And then this guy thinks he's on fire and then he leaps out of a window in true Mission Impossible style with a stunt of sorts. And I thought, oh, he must be leaping out to a pool or something because he's on fire. But no, he's just
to his
leaping
death.
To his death. What if he didn't leap out the window? What if he just thought he was on fire? Nothing would happen. He wouldn't die.
That's true, yeah.
If somebody, like the poison would wear off.
If literally anybody had restrained him, held him down, if he'd said, hey, I'm on fire, and they just humoured him and dumped a bucket of water on him, he probably would be alive to this day. Maybe not, because it's 1988. Maybe he'd be dead anyway.
That's exactly it.
He was getting on in years, it seemed.
He certainly was.
Yeah.
So anyway, Jim Phelps gets delivered a little briefcase. He's been retired for a long time, it seems. He's out of the game.
Yeah.
Sure, he's done some car commercials in the early 80s. Maybe we can show some clips of that. But they've kind of updated the this is your mission kind of thing. It used to be like a record player, I believe, in the original series.
It was cave paintings.
It was cave, that's right, yeah.
And then what would happen is you'd read the information on the cave paintings and then they would release a raptor into the cave And it would just, oh, they'd release a woolly mammoth and it would just tear the cave to pieces.
See, I'd rather at the very end it said, this cave will be painted over in 3, 2, 1. Then a guy just comes in with a big brush.
Get out of here.
Right, so he gets he opens up his little briefcase. It's got a thumb scanner.
Yeah.
First of all, great tech in this series.
Not bad,
It doesn't feel too aged, considering when it's from.
And it feels mostly realistic.
Yeah, it does. So he's got a little bloody mini disc player with a tiny little disc.
See, that's the part that annoyed me. Because it's a self-destructing box, right?
Mm.
Why does he need to take the little disc out and put the little disc in?
That's a good question.
And then push the little play on the little disc? It's because it's a little disc.
It's a little
disc.
And
they wanted to show off that it's a little disc.
They wanted to show a little disc. Mm. And this would have been well before the era of mini discs, I assume.
Yeah, yeah.
Good stuff.
Were CDs prevalent in 1988?
I think they had them, but they were very new technology.
Yeah,
they were the laser discs of their day.
It would have been one of those things where if you wanted a CD player, it was $700.
That's right, yeah.
And they were like, well, imagine if a CD player was even smaller. You can't even conceive of it, can you?
That was in the era of CD players.
This will hold 6 songs.
Yeah, that's right.
Can you, or a mission briefing.
If you stepped near it, the laser would kind of go out of alignment and it would never work again.
You'd have to get a technician in. He would charge you $700.
Correct. So we get a look at his new team. Now, yeah. There are recurring cast members from the original series, but there's none of
really?
That in this episode.
You know what struck me most about these particular characters? They seem more like hobbyists than any kind of... They weren't like, this guy's an ex-Green Beret and now he does this. It's like, this guy's a rock climber or something.
This guy likes model trains, maybe?
This guy's a drama teacher. But he also is in the IMF for some reason. Really?
That is literally one. His name's Nicholas Black. He teaches drama and he's also a master of disguise and changing his voice.
I'm fairly confident. I don't know when this is coming out, but we also played the Mission Impossible video game.
That's coming up next week.
There's a character in that and his two powers are...
Yes.
Everybody gets two powers. He can disguise himself as a bad guy and he's got a boomerang. And I'm pretty sure that's this guy. But we see no boomerangs whatsoever in this episode.
Not in the pilot episode.
No.
You don't give everything away in the episode.
Yeah, yeah. But I guess he's in his subsequent episodes, he's probably renowned for his boomerang throwing. Also, he's Australian. Maybe that's it.
Maybe it is.
Yeah.
Cassie Randall's the next one. She's a top designer. Also, she helped trap a terrorist group that killed her boyfriend. So she's also a designer slash in the IMF.
Yep.
And then there's Max Hart. His brother was in Vietnam and he never came home, so he just went and got him.
All right.
That's pretty good.
That's impressive, yeah.
Oh, sorry, there's also Grant Collier, who's Barney's son from the original series, and he's the greatest mind in MIT for the last 20 years. So a guy with actual legitimate abilities, it would seem.
And a great cardigan.
That's right.
He's got two great things.
So this killer, we find out his name is Drake.
Yeah.
Like the duck.
Not the rapper?
No.
All right.
Like the duck, Mason.
Okay, all right. Like a male duck.
Like a male duck.
The most terrifying... Normally it's like the condor or the eagle or the
right.
shrike.
The jackal.
That's like, he's a boy
the
duck.
Spear.
It's the boy duck.
The boy duck. So the boy duck, right?
Yeah, I'm listening.
The way that he murders his victims, and this is why no one's ever been able to catch him, because he decides at the very last minute what he's going to do. So he'll go into the room and just be like, well, I guess I'm just going to slam this guy's head into a billiard table and then leave.
I mean, the last time he did use a very elaborate diamond shooting pen. So, I mean, there must be some forethought.
I guess so,
like,
yeah.
When does he choose? In fact, the method he uses in this particular episode, you need a lot of planning.
Yeah. Maybe he's just got all that stuff on him.
Like, all the time.
Maybe he's just got a whole lot of diamonds and they're all slightly different coloured and they do a slightly different hallucination. And
Good. That's
his idea of random.
Yeah, right.
So, in terms of the methods he's used before, the ones they mention are poison and a sniper rifle. That impossible to predict... Just shoot a guy with a rifle. But hey, good on him. So anyway, they go to London because that's where his next target is going to be. It's going to be some random union guy.
And you know what happens when you go to London? Accents.
Yay! Boy, do they. And is there, Mason.
Yes.
So the idea is they want him to go to their hotel so that they're going to rig up so they can monitor him. But the thing about this guy is he always picks a hotel at complete random when he gets there.
Oh, my God.
So he'll look at a letter and be like, S, okay? And he'll go to S in the phone.
I want to go to the Snake Hotel. It's full of snakes.
So what happens is...
This guy's putting up all kinds of roadblocks, isn't he?
He really is. So they're ready, waiting for him in the first cab.
Yep.
But he doesn't want to go to the first cab. He goes to the second cab. Guess what?
They're also waiting for him in the second cab.
Brilliant. So they get in.
What if he'd gone to the third cab, though?
What if he did go to the bloody third cab?
That's what I'm talking about.
So I can't remember the name of the hotel that he mentions, but they go, yeah, no worries, I can take you there. So they take him kind of the long way and they put a whole lot of stuff to kind of block him from, you know, from getting there immediately. And the reason they do that is because the rest of the team are at the hotel and they're changing all the signage. They're changing the street sign. They're etching pint glasses with like laser glass cutters. Yeah.
They're printing off menus and coasters. Menus and promotional magazines. They're writing a magazine.
That's
they're
right,
like,
yeah.
Hey, welcome to the Ruben. What is it? The Ruben Hotel? The Rhubarb Something Hotel. Like that, it's the Rhubarb Hotel.
Sure. They're doing all of this stuff. And I am genuinely impressed watching this.
Yeah.
Like the effort that they're going to. There's a couple of things where I feel like you could probably have done that earlier. You don't need to do that in the 15 minutes that he's going to arrive. And that is put a video behind a mirror and put a microphone under his desk. You could do that at any point.
That's you could shave off precious minutes.
That's exactly it.
Yeah. But I mean, they're not professional intelligence operatives. They're a designer and a drama teacher and et cetera. So,
exactly. Yeah.
You know.
What I also like about this series is whenever they show surveillance footage or like footage from inside the mirror, it's not just footage they've already shot that they just put a grain over. You know, TV shows normally do that. It's specifically shot to be like, oh no, this is footage specifically from this camera.
You say that, but when we introduce the characters initially, when Phelps looks at the
dossier.
The dossier or the agents, they're just like stock footage people. The drama teacher's just approaching a group of students and then it's a close-up shot of him and he's like,
fair point.
Okay. Ah, my students.
That's a fair point. Okay, you got me on
One of them's flipping a sweater over their shoulder like,
So when he gets to the hotel, Jim Phelps is on the desk because he's good on him. It seems like this hotel was set up specifically for dogs as well. Yes,
it's a hotel for dogs.
But you know, it's got like secret hidden rooms and that. So I'm assuming this was like a British intelligence thing.
It was probably a murder hotel.
It's probably a murder hotel. Yeah, good on him. So when he picks his own room at random, they're like, oh no, because we had room 7 prepared for him. And what are we going to do? So they switch the numbers on the door. Very classy, very cool.
Uh-huh.
So they get him in the right room.
You'd think he would notice. He seems like a man who's keen on the details. You'd think it'd be weird that he'd go, okay, here I am, room 10, 11, 7?
No, they switched the corridor.
Oh, what?
Yeah, they're way ahead of you, Mason.
Wow, that is
They got
madness.
Two cabs. They've got multiple signs. They've got pint glasses he never sees. They are well ahead of him.
Hey, mister, you want a pint? No. Ah, oh, damn it. Could have saved a minute there.
So he needs to make a phone call to find out what his next mission is, but he's not going to use the phone in the hotel. He's not an idiot, Mason. So he goes outside to a phone box, and you'd think that the IMF team wouldn't be ready for him, but guess what? They fucking are.
Yeah, that's right. They got some sort of laser microphone situation going on.
So they know exactly where he's going. So they find out what his mission is, and his plan is to meet a blonde woman with a white rose in the park. So what they do, they ring back, they pretend to be him, and they decide to meet with the woman, and then they send the IMF agent to meet with him, pretending to be the person to give him the mission.
It's actually very clever.
It's very clever. The drama teacher plays Drake, doesn't he? Boy Duck, sorry.
Yes, he does.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And the fashion designer plays the lady with the white rose.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, they swap the picture of the construction worker union guy with one of them. So he thinks that his target is actually the IMF agent. But it's an elaborate misdirect, Mason. Do you see what I'm saying?
It's
very complicated. But he also figures out when he meets up with the woman that it's a different girl than the one on the phone. And you think the jig is up. But she's just like, yeah, so what if I am? Maybe we could meet up for a bloody date later. And he's like, I'd like that very much. Thank you very much.
I'm smooth as silk.
Okay, so the next step is they need to figure out how he's going to kill this union guy. So they've got their IMF plant waiting in the room to be murdered. But he's like, don't worry about it. I won't be murdered.
Mm.
I mean, he's not, but it seems like...
It's a very thin line, isn't it?
That's it. So they're following Drake. He slips the tail somehow.
Yep.
He's a boy duck. He can do what he wants.
That's
he's
right.
Amazing.
He's got that oily coating.
That's
you know?
It.
He can dive underwater.
So he gets into the hotel. They know he's going to strike in 15 minutes, but they don't know how or where. But he goes to the room underneath. He cuts a hole in the roof. He sticks explosive putty under the IMF agent. They have no idea it's coming, Mason. And then he bails.
Yeah.
He's
out
of there.
The explosive putty is made up from golf balls.
Yeah.
Again, so, he had to have some explosive golf balls on him.
And I guess he got them through customs. I mean, it's the 80s.
It's the 80s. You can get anything through customs.
That's it.
You know? You can just be like, hey, can I take this gun on a plane? I'm going to need this gun later. For what? Just later?
Golf.
Yeah, it's my golf gun.
So basically, though, they see him leave the hotel and they realize he must have set something up. And
yeah.
So they escape just in time. The room explodes. It's a bit of a stunt.
Yeah. You'd I would have used a bellhop if I were them.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But what I like about this is, though, they do set up stuff that never comes into play. Like, he doesn't go in the same...
The pint glasses.
The pint glass. He never goes into the same room as the guy. It didn't matter what he looked like.
That's true, yeah.
So you're seeing things that don't end up ultimately paying off.
Which is often which weird like. With a heist yeah. movie where it... Or like a... You know what? And it, well, I guess to the, at some point it's simultaneously interesting and disappointing. Like, you know where you watch a Bond movie and he uses exactly the gadgets yeah. that are required and you're like, how
when
did
he got
he...
that avalanche-proof snow jacket.
Yeah, right.
And then he uses it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, he's got that gun that shoots a weird round that makes somebody inflate and become irresistible to crocodiles or whatever, you know?
And oh, then, I remember.
Lo and behold. But yeah, you're right.
So anyway, Boy Duck gets back to his hotel room. And who be waiting for him, Mason? The IMF agent pretending to be the lady with the white rose. I'd imagine without the visuals, if you're listening to this, it's probably very confusing. But basically...
You know what a woman looks like. You know what a white rose looks like.
But what woman? You know what I mean? She's the IMF agent and she pretends to try and kill him. The idea being that then he'll go back and kill his boss.
Yes.
Because then they'll find out who Scorpio is, mm-hmm. who's the mastermind of all of this. Did I mention that earlier?
Never.
I can't remember.
But it, you know
that's
what?
The ultimate plan, though. They need to find out who Scorpio
but
is.
Here's the thing. You didn't mention it, but, you know, 50-50, if you're watching some sort of espionage type show or movie, odds are pretty good that the villain's called Scorpio.
Absolutely. So he kills her, or he thinks he does, but it's an elaborate bloody misdirect. And he goes back to what I think is Los Angeles? To kill Scorpio.
Yeah, right.
And then we're going to see the big reveal of who Scorpio is. And it turns out it's just some guy from the party at the start.
Yeah.
Who I didn't really remember.
It was the guy from earlier. Yeah, it was the weird thin-lipped man who I thought was Jim Phelps initially. And I'm like, all right.
And the scorpion, or the Scorpio has become to the scorpion, Mason.
That's absolutely right.
He decides to use the same method to kill Scorpio as he did the agent at the start, the old...
The what?
The agent at the start.
Oh, I thought you said... Yeah, okay, right.
Did you think I said the agent at the start?
Yes.
I don't think he was
like,
Asian.
Steady on, mate.
So I guess he must have bought two of those diamond poisoned hallucinogen things.
Yeah. He probably bought them at Aldi.
Yeah, you probably can't just buy one. It's probably
yeah, it's in a
pack
of two. Yeah, totally right. Exactly. That's the shipping that gets you.
It is. It really is.
It's like $40.
So he gives him the poison and the guy, realizing that he's going to die, grabs his gun. But Boy Duck has already taken the bullets out of the gun.
He's
one step ahead.
He's the ultimate assassin.
But what he's not ahead of is that guy just throwing a knife at him
yeah,
hitting him in the stomach.
Yeah.
So we don't see it, but Scorpio jumps out the window to his death also.
Yeah.
Good on him. But Drake, Boy Duck, he lives. He's in an ambulance at the end and he sees all the IMF agents there who he saw in England.
They're
and
laughing
like,
at back pattern.
Yeah, he's like, you fucking pricks. You were one step ahead. And that's the end of this show.
Why? Does he come back ever?
I don't know.
Should we have looked into it?
Well, I started to watch another episode because I really enjoyed this.
Me too. I also started watching another episode.
But then I realized, I think we both realized, that all of these are exactly the
Every
same.
Every episode's exactly the same. It's always just tricking somebody into going in the wrong room.
Yeah, and there's a murder up top, and then they get a mini disc player, and then they assemble the team, and then all the other things unfold.
Who should I use on this particular impossible mission? The same guys as last time? The only four people also in the credits? I guess so. I guess I could use some fashion designing and some drama teaching on this mission, yeah.
Yeah, great stuff. All in all, though, I think just pick one episode and watch it.
Yeah, and you'll
be pleasantly
surprised.
You don't have to watch all of them, but it's pretty good.
Yeah.
Especially,
I mean, aside from all those problems we talked about.
Yes, aside from all those problems, yeah. But overall, I give this better than Mission Impossible 2.
Oh, absolutely.
But not as good as Mission Impossible 4.
That's a good solid...
So Mission Impossible 3, I guess.
Yeah, it did. Oh.
It gets a Mission Impossible 3
it's
from
Mission
me.
Impossible 3 by way of Mission Impossible 1.
Okay, fair point. Yeah. Anyway, we do Caravan of Garbage here every week. We're playing a game next week related to Mission Impossible, and it quite possibly is one of the dumbest things we've ever played.
It's so weird and bad. I don't understand. Here's a little hint. It's set in Russia.
Yep.
I think maybe it was made in Russia as well.
It may have been made in
Russia. It's got that vibe about it.
Yeah. Unforgiving.
Yeah.
And nonsense.
It's a real worker and parasite.
Yeah, definitely. But there's videos for Caravan of Garbage every Tuesday, but there's also other videos here every Sunday and Thursday. Plus, we have a podcast called The Weekly Planet where we talk movies and comics and TV shows. And you can also find all of that at the great planetbroadcasting.com. It's collated, isn't it, Mason?
If you want to toot your own horn, absolutely, planetbroadcasting.com.
I don't run that site, Mason, but I will happily toot the horn of those who do. Goodbye!
Grab that gem, you guys. We'll see you next week.
Na 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 Fred Durst.
I was gonna say, I was gonna try and think of a Limp Bizkit reference. That's good.
Just say Fred Durst.
Fred Durst. Yeah. Wait, what's the other guy's name?
I don't know.
The guy with the face.
Fred Durst's brother.
No, Wes Borland. He had a side project called Big Dumb Face.
Great.
Yeah.
Is it good?
No.
Shock.
Yeah.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates. I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.